This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Greetings out there to everybody at TFMR. It's Thursday, December 17th. That means it is only eight more days to Christmas. And it's time for your Thursday conversation. I don't know if this will be the last one of the year or not. But if it is, we're ending on a high note, no doubt about that, as I've got my buddy Brent Johnson on the line. Brent, of course, CEO, portfolio manager at Santiago Capital in San Francisco. I'm lucky enough to consider Brent a friend and have considered him a friend now for years, actually. Isn't that crazy, Brent? Where does time go? So anyway, it is great to have him join us today for just a little look back and look ahead. My friend, thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Craig. It's always fun to talk to you and your listeners.
Let's start here. Tell everybody what you do for a living, because I think a lot of folks, they think Brent Johnson, he's in the dairy business.
Well, I sort of am. So thanks. I'll give you just a quick little overview. So I've been in the wealth management business, for lack of a better word, for a little over 20 years now. And I manage I have about 15 different very high net worth clients that I kind of help develop an overall wealth management plan for them. And then I help them in implement that plan. And I manage the liquid assets that are part of that plan. So we have very diversified portfolios. No two clients are the same because they're all customized to that individual. And as part of that, then, you know, I obviously, have some specific themes that I play and different ideas that I have that will get implemented, you know, in the different client portfolios. But at the end of the day, I'm a overall wealth manager. I'm a portfolio manager. And then I also have a fund that has a very specific theme that we're playing. And that fund is just one small part of clients' overall portfolios. So I hope that makes sense.
Right. And that's a hedge fund, right? So you can do about anything you want in there.
That's right.
All right.
You know, so, and clients, I've been a long proponent of owning gold in an overall portfolio.
Yep.
So gold is a part, so we can talk about that if you want. And a lot of stuff going on. It's been a crazy year, and happy to talk about it.
Well, let's start there, because it has been a crazy year. I felt like the macro conditions that had driven gold to break out last year, and we were right about that. I thought that would carry over to this year before we knew anything about COVID, and obviously that has complicated, you know, and changed everything this year. Tell me about your year, what you've seen. I mean, it's just that time of year, that kind of, you know, introspective, respective, look back kind of time. What are your initial planning thoughts for next year? Where do you think we're headed?
Yeah, so for me personally, it's been kind of a tale of two years, to be honest. I saw the market and traded the market about as well as I ever have in my life from, call it, late last year through mid to late April of this year. And then since, I have not called it very well. In fact, I've gotten it in some cases very wrong. And I'll talk about that as well. But I mean, essentially, I mean, you know that for years I've been a believer in gold, and the reason I've been a believer in gold and always said it was only a matter of time before it would eventually, you know, do what it would have been doing for the last year, was because the entire structure and design of the monetary system, it's just flawed, and it will eventually break. And as a result, you know, you need to own gold. And it's for all those same reasons that I've also, over the last years, been bullish on the dollar. And that kind of makes me a little bit unique as far as gold. But most people in the gold world, and, you know, not everybody, but most people in the gold world come into it because they understand that, you know, fiat currency is a poor store of value. Governments will eventually just print everything that they need to print. So that will devalue the currency, and therefore gold goes up, right? And the dollar and the other currencies go to zero. And that's fine. And it's good to have that understanding. But where I'm a little unique, I guess, is that for all those same reasons, I actually think the dollar is going to get stronger versus all the other fiat currencies. even though it may be falling versus gold. So,
right.
This is, you know, being bullish the dollar is not necessarily bearish gold.
Right.
It can be bearish gold for short periods of time, and we'll talk about that. But overall, I've always said there's nothing more bullish for gold than a strong dollar, because based on the design of the monetary system, a strong dollar will just absolutely wreck the monetary system. And if the monetary system falls, then gold's going to do extremely, extremely well,
right?
Because it will be a replacement, or at least a potential replacement for that system. And so, you know, for the last couple of years, I've been talking about people need to get ready for this dollar shortage and this dollar spike. And that really played out in spades, January, February, and March.
Mm-hmm.
And when it happens, it can come out of nowhere. You know, on March 9th, the dollar was at 94, and, you know, 10 days later, it was at 103. I mean, so it went up 10% in 10 days. And for a currency, that's a big move, especially over a short period of time. And, you know, I think, everybody got wrecked on the other side of that trade.
Right.
You know, stocks fell, bonds went down, gold went down a couple $100, the miners went down 30 or 40%, in some cases 50%. You remember the GDX and GDXJ were both below 20 on March 19th or something like that, right?
Yeah,
now,
no,
they've
believe
recovered.
Me. Yeah, I remember.
Like but my point, and this was part of the reason why I've been pointing out the design of the system and why it's important to understand a strong dollar, because even though people might not want to sell gold or might not want to sell their miners, if you get a margin call, or if you just have to go into liquidation mode to get cash to pay a whatever bill, you don't really sell what you want to, you sell what you have to, right? And that's exactly what we saw in March. Now, and so that's why I say, you know, going forward, if we see more dollar spikes, I would anticipate that under certain circumstances, you could see gold get hit a couple $100 again. You could see the miners pull back 20 or 30% on these big dollar spikes. It doesn't mean that they're not going to recover really fast, right? They did. They recovered really fast. But in that moment where you need liquidity, you know, gold and the miners would be seen as a source of funds. And if you think about it, that's why you own gold to begin with, right? You own gold so that in some kind of an emergency, you have insurance. And, you know, sometimes you don't ever want to cash in your insurance policy. Sometimes you have to. And when you do, you're really glad you had the insurance, right? long story short, you know, we called the market really well. I have a fund which is playing the dollar getting stronger and the knock-on effects of the dollar getting stronger. That did extremely well through March. The equities that I manage for clients, we had them. We've always been long. We've been long for years. We had those hedged somewhat, not completely hedged, but we had those hedged in the early part of the year. So as the markets were selling off hard in March, we were, you know, losing money on our equities, but not nearly. You know, I mean, at one point the market was down 35 to 50%. You know, depending on whether it was Dow or Nasdaq. You know, and ours weren't down anywhere near that much. And then we actually removed our hedges the day of the low. We called the low great. We started coming out of it. We even bought a few call options. And so, you know, into April and May, you know, we were pretty. But what we thought that we would get that hard bounce, and because we knew the central banks would come in and provide supply.
You know,
we knew they would provide liquidity. We knew they would do QE. They would try to solve this quote unquote dollar shortage. So we were prepared for the bounce. But what we thought would happen is that we'd get a hard bounce and then we would roll back over. And the reason we thought we would roll back over is because despite the new supply of liquidity coming in of the currency, we felt that the demand for the currency would still just swamp it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we got wrong, and in hindsight, we should have thought about this better and we didn't, but what we missed was, not only did they come in and provide supply, which we were ready for, but they did an amazing job of deferring dollar demand. So what I mean by that is it wasn't just a matter of coming in and doing QE. It wasn't just a matter of passing the CARES Act and sending people checks to get them cash. They also said, you know what? You don't have to pay your mortgage for the next 3 or 4 months or 6 months. You know, talk to your banks. You know, you can defer those payments. You don't have to pay your rent, and landlords can't kick you out if you don't pay your rent, right? They passed those kinds of laws. So people didn't have to pay their rent. You know, if you had ordered, if you were in a manufacturer, or I mean, if you were in some kind of a business and you ordered inventory from China, and because the planes weren't flying and ships weren't floating and they weren't delivering the inventory, well, you didn't have to pay for that order. So the dollars didn't have to go to pay for that inventory. And, you know, my point is they did an amazing job of all this. And then with people locked down, you know, the demand for the people still want to go do things. But if you can't go take a vacation, you know, you don't need dollars to pay for the hotel.
Right.
And so all of these, you know, all of these forces and these laws and these, you know, short-term stimulus packages not only provided supply, but they deferred demand. And that has allowed the world, quote unquote, to take a breather. And so what I've spoken about so far is just the domestic market, but the same thing was happening internationally. What many people don't realize, and what I've tried to explain over the last couple of years, is there's actually two dollar markets. There's the US dollar domestic market, and then there's the euro dollar market. And this, when I say the euro dollar market, I don't mean euros. This isn't another currency. This is euro dollars are just dollars that exist outside the United States. And the market for euro dollars outside the United States is even bigger than the domestic market for dollars inside the States. So it's an incredibly huge, complex, intertwined spider web of dollar demand outside the United States. And, you know, there are a number of countries that have borrowed in dollars. And that's fine. If you borrow in a currency and the currency goes down, it becomes easier to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
But if you borrow in a currency and it goes up, it becomes more expensive to pay off.
Right.
And that's another reason why a rising dollar puts all this pressure on the rest of the world. And it kind of becomes this feedback loop where a strong dollar causes pain, and then, you know, market prices fall, and therefore it causes even more pain, and it causes the dollar to go up even higher. It's a short squeeze. And so, you know, a number of the international monetary organizations, the IMF, the World Bank, you know, they have a number of dollar loans out there to a number of emerging and developing countries. And they said to them, you know what, you don't have to pay your, there's a ton of them that were coming due this year. They said, you know, you don't have to pay those this year. We'll defer those, right? So they did an amazing job of just deferring dollar demand. And that has allowed the world to breathe. It's allowed them to get out of that, you know, rising dollar short squeeze. It's allowed them to, you know, the cash flow that they do have coming in to, you know, not just go to pay off the debt that they have, but, you know, to try to, you know, either keep their business open or you know, buy the goods that they need. But it hasn't had to go to service the debt. And that's what's allowed the market to stay up. And then, you know, the, you know, as prices rise, that's the other thing. Once prices rise, you know, then you don't have the margin calls, right? And you don't have the forced selling. So I think that's where we're at. I still think the problems are out there.
Right.
I still think that the dollar demand is going to come back. And the interesting thing is when it does come back, it's not only going to come back to where it was, but all those deferred payments are going to be lumped on top of it, because you got to remember those payments were deferred.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
They were just deferred. So I feel like we have this huge wall of dollar demand just sitting out there. And I don't know if we're going to hit it again in 6 months, or, you know, whether it's 6 days or 6 months, but we will hit it again. And all of the programs that have gone to provide the short-term relief actually make the long-term problem bigger.
Right,
and we've
right.
talked about this before, right? The way they solve these crises is that they borrow more money and they flood the system with the dollars, right? And so, but it actually just makes the overall problem bigger. It kicks the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that there's going to be more marches, more in February and March. You know, things got pretty crazy. I think we have a number of those in our future over the next couple of years. So I think the markets are euphoric right now. It doesn't mean they can't go higher in the short term. Like I said, I'm kind of reluctantly long equities, but I'm under no illusion that this is just all smooth sailing from here.
Right.
So I kind of rambled for a long time there. I hope that made sense.
No, it made great sense. And you remind me of the thing Eric Sprott likes to say about having a party by yourself, right? I mean, you can be right. Yeah. and have the trend just, you know, it's just not working. I mean, there's a short term and there's a long term, right? You're talking about structural, fundamental things in the long term that can be really be overshadowed in the short term. What did you think yesterday?
I think that's what's happened. And, you know, listen, I have been very vocal about the dollar, and I've even coined the whole, you know, this whole dollar milkshake. You know, the U.S. dollar is going to suck up the rest of the world's liquidity.
Yeah.
And, you know, pounded that drum pretty hard. And again, part of it, the reason I pound it is because I believe in it, and I just want to share what I've learned.
Right.
But the other part is that I'm actually trying to help people, right? I want them to be aware that it not everything may be as they seem. And if there's a small chance I'm right, it does tremendous damage, right? And so the point is, even if there's only a small chance that I'm right, you should be aware of it, because if I am right, it can really impact your portfolio.
Right.
That's exactly what we saw in March.
Right.
I think a lot of people think, because I've pounded the drum so hard on this thesis, they think that I'm only owning dollars and that's the only thing that I own and that's all our clients own. But that's just, you know, it's because we know how much damage that a rising dollar can cause that we think we need to track it and be aware of it and plan for it. And so we have a fund that does this. And we recommend that clients put 5% of their portfolio into this to be ready for this spiking dollar. It doesn't mean that I think everybody should put 100% of their capital into this. I just think it's going to play out. And when it plays out, I think if you have a 5% allocation, you can make a ton of money on this.
A perfect hedge.
And if I'm wrong, if I'm wrong and it goes to zero, that means the other 95% is rocking and rolling
right.
And doing fantastic.
Right.
And it's going to more than make up for the 5% that I was wrong about. So that's kind of how I see it. So, you know, there's been many times where I've come on here and all we talked about is gold. There's been times where I've come on here and all we've talked about is the dollar. But I think people forget that I'm not all or nothing. I think, you know, these arguments
precisely
that you should either own gold or Bitcoin. It's ridiculous. You
right.
can own both of them.
Right.
You can have a diversified portfolio. Anyway.
And that's precisely right. And that's kind of the moral of the story, is that you just have to understand all of these different machinations. Too many people just think of it as kind of a binary thing. The dollar's going up or the dollar's going down.
Right.
Well, but I think, I mean, obviously you're right about the structural problems, you know, of this system. Now, they are spinning the plates, man, as fast as they can. Well, maybe not. Maybe they can spin them even faster, Brent. What did you make yesterday of buried in the Powell's press conference was this, you know, they're extending those dollar swap lines into September.
Yeah.
What?
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's actually a huge, huge thing. And I think over the next, call it 2 to 3 years, I think understanding swap lines is going to be critical, because swap lines is the method to which they get dollars to the rest of the world.
Right.
So this is going to get a little wonky. So stay with me. I'm going to try to.
No, but please do.
Because
I'm with you. Because I thought when they did that, it's like, okay, they're telling you that, I mean, we're far from fixed.
Right, right. And so, again, we go back to these two markets, the U.S. dollar domestic market and the euro dollar market. The only way that people outside the United States get dollars, well, there's two ways. Trade with the United States, in which, you know, Saudi Arabia sends us oil, we send them dollars. Or, you know, China sends us manufactured goods, we send them dollars. And then those dollars get outside and they stay outside and they circulate outside. Okay, so dollars get created that way. That's how the euro dollar market gets dollars. The other way that the euro dollar market gets dollars is a bank in London has dollars, and they will extend a loan to somebody else in dollars. So they will loan dollars. They will use the dollars that they have as collateral to extend a loan to Turkey. And Turkey has a lot of U.S. dollar debt. Or they'll extend a loan to Egypt or wherever it is, right? So, and that's the way that new money gets created, fractional reserve banking. And, you know, there's some debate on whether we even have fractional reserve banking anymore, but because there is no reserves, you know, the reserve ratio is now zero.
Yeah, right.
But the point is the way you create new money is it being loaned into existence. We have a debt-based monetary system. So for the money supply to really grow, you need loans to take place. this is partially why QE has helped prop up the markets, but has not helped the overall economy, because it gets when they do QE, the money gets trapped in the banking system because the banks aren't lending it out. They're just keeping the money. It's sitting there in bank reserves. And so it makes the monetary base bigger, which could lead to more monetary supply if they loaned it into existence. But if they don't make loans, it doesn't become highly inflationary. And so that's also true with the euro dollar market. If there's all these dollars sitting out there, but if they're not extending credit, if they're not using those dollars that exist to extend more credit, then it's not growing. And if it's not growing, then people have a tougher time getting a hold of the dollars, and there's a lower velocity of dollars. And so it becomes harder to get them. It becomes harder to service all those U.S. dollar loans. And if there's a contraction, if there's a slowdown in growth or a recession in the U.S., the Fed can come in and put new money into the system. But there's no Fed outside the United States that can create new dollars. Only the Fed can create dollars. And the Fed doesn't have jurisdiction over Japan and Europe and South America and Africa. So when those locales need dollars, where do they get them? If the dollars out there aren't currently circulating, there's nowhere for them to get them. And that really leads to a credit crisis. So these swap lines are a way for the Fed to get, as an example, they will give dollars to the ECB, and the ECB will swap euros back to the Fed. And then the ECB has these dollars. They will go to their banks or their companies in their jurisdiction and say, okay, who needs dollars? We will loan them to you. And so then those companies or those banks say, oh my gosh, we need dollars. We'll take that loan. But the whole key is that it's a loan. And a loan solves temporary liquidity, but it makes the overall debt problem even worse, right? Sure. So that's the whole point of the swap lines. That's why they have them, to get liquidity to places outside the United States. What I think is ultimately going to happen with these swap lines is that they're going to become a political tool. We'll give, you know, England, our closest ally, will get a swap line, right?
Right.
But let's say that Colombia or Iran. Venezuela, yeah. They need dollars. Or Iran, they're not going to get a swap line, right?
So, no.
And if they don't get a swap line, then they're going to have trouble operating on the. It's almost like a sanction, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, so I think it's a very important thing for two reasons. One, it shows that the problem still exists. It shows that the Fed may have to provide more liquidity to the system. They wouldn't have to provide more liquidity to the system unless there was trouble out there. So it indicates that there is still potential trouble out there. And then it also indicates that the debt out there will get bigger. I mean, again, all of this extension of dollar credit just reinforces the problem. It doesn't actually solve anything. So, a lot of these arguments for my dollar strength argument are very similar to the reasons to own gold. And I think a lot of people miss that.
Right.
A lot of people miss that. They think the dollar's going to go to zero. You know, Peter Schiff is right. The dollar's going to zero, and gold's going to $10,000. And you know what? That might happen. I can't rule it out. I've always said that's possible. But what I've also said is that, you know, pretend that gold didn't exist. I mean, I know it does, and I know we all like it. But
right.
For a second, just pretend that gold doesn't exist. Right now, the system right now is designed the same way it was back when we were on a gold standard, except for the U.S. dollar is gold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the dollar underlies the whole global monetary system. And if the whole global monetary system kind of comes under attack, in the same way that gold would have risen, you know, 100 years ago when we were on the gold standard, the dollar will rise this time because we're on a dollar standard. Now, you might think it's stupid that we're on a dollar standard. You might think it's a ridiculous notion that the rest of the world runs on dollars, but it doesn't change the fact that it does.
That it does, right.
And that's what we saw.
Right.
And that's what we saw in markets, and that's what we saw in March.
Right.
And I think that's one of the most important things to kind of understand, is that you can have your opinion of what you would like to see happen, but, you know, when you're investing, you should have a good understanding of what's going to happen, right? just because you want something to happen doesn't mean that it's going to. I mean, I would love it if we were on a gold standard and that gold, you know, backed our monetary system and that, you know, it was priced much higher and we didn't have to worry about fiat currencies losing value. But that's not the world I live in, right? It's a nice fantasy to have. And maybe someday we'll go back there. I'm doubtful, but I can't rule it out. But in the meantime, I've got to kind of play the cards I'm dealt. And the cards I'm dealt is a fiat monetary system with the dollar backing it. And for all those reasons, I think that, you know, over the next 2 or 3 years, I think the next 2 or 3 years are going to be more chaotic, not less chaotic. So anyway,
and Brent,
again,
there's kind
I know
of
I'm rambling a lot, but that's my view.
And Brent, there's this kind of these, it's not necessarily a dichotomy or I'm struggling to get the right term, but there's the value of gold that so many think is actually price, but there's the value of gold. And then there's this free floating exchange rate system where we're comparing the dollar to the, because the dollar index is just simply comparing the dollar to this basket of all these other fiat. And you're
exactly.
talking about the
exactly.
dollar going up because it's the seesaw. That means all those other fiat are going down.
That's right.
But that's happening
right. And that's why
irrespective
I, well,
of your, the value of your gold.
Yeah. No, exactly. And that's what I've said for years now, that we are going to get into an environment where the dollar and gold rise together.
Right.
And I've had several people say that can't happen.
Isn't that funny?
Saying,
I mean, come
yes,
on. That's not that hard
yes,
to get.
Can.
How come
I mean,
people
you,
can't
if,
figure that
if,
out?
I don't know. And so when I hear people say the Fed's just going to kill the value of the dollar, is going to zero. Okay, versus gold, perhaps that's true. And then they'll say,
right.
well, if that's true, then why do you care which fiat wins? And the reason I care is I don't want to have 100% of my money in gold. I want to have a good allocation to gold, but I don't want to have 100% of my money in gold. And if I don't have 100% of my money in gold, then the part that's not in gold, I have to do something else with, right? And it and to figure out what to do with the non-gold allocation, understanding the fiat relationship is critical. Because you can make a killing if you understand, if you can figure out which one is the king of the fiats and trade them against each other. I mean, the foreign currency market's the biggest market in the world.
Yep.
And the value of currency has a big determinant on asset prices all over the world. And like I said, I was very right through the first part of the year. I've been very wrong the second part of the year. I thought that they would get a little bit of dollar weakness. I did not think they would get it back to where, I mean, I don't know if you know, it's sitting at the lowest price in 3 years right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before we started talking, at least it was.
Yeah.
I didn't think they would get it back down here, but they did. And you're on Twitter too, and you know that I'm pretty active on Twitter. I get all these people saying, "Oh God, Johnson must be hurting this morning." And you know, the reality is, yeah, it hurts. Nobody likes to be wrong. But again, you know, if I had my entire portfolio in dollars, I'd be hurt, but I don't, you know,
right.
it's so
right.
again, nobody wants to be wrong. I'm a big enough boy to sit here and say, I've been wrong for the last 8 months. The question is, am I going to be wrong for the next 8 months or the next 2 or 3 years? Because that's ultimately my timeline. I think this all plays out over the next 2 or 3 years. And I think there's much more of this game to play.
Dude, wrong in terms of short-term direction of the dollar. That, I mean,
right.
let's not just put you in this camp that, you know, there's the dunce, old Brent sitting in the corner, totally
yeah.
wrong. Okay? I mean, you're doing a lot of things right. And so let's just, you've been very generous with your time, and this has been extraordinarily valuable. I'm sure everybody listening has really appreciated it. Let's wrap up with this. Would it be, would I be correct in summarizing it this way? We're going to plow forward into 2021. All sorts of uncertainty remains. And almost take it day by day in that,
yeah.
As long as everything seems to be okay, well, we'll move forward another day. Everything's okay. And you can see all the ripple effects of all this, you know, trillions of new debt and all the stuff that they're going to have to do to keep the plate spinning. But we're going to really pay attention, right? Like every single day, because again, for that reversal
absolutely.
Could come at any time.
I mean, absolutely. The other interesting thing I'll point out is right now, I mean, markets are euphoric, right? Equities are at their all-time high. Gold is near its all-time high, not quite, but, you know, within $100 or so. The miners are not quite where they were in August, but they're, you know, they're much higher than they were a couple of years ago. Bitcoin is at its all-time high. So all the, you know, all these, the dollar's at a three-year low. So everybody, not everybody, but the trend, everybody has bought into this global reflation. Commodities are going up, equities are going up, the dollar is going lower. And so, you know, that's, you know, euphoria is kind of at its height. And at the same time, we've got the biggest speculative long position in oil, the biggest commercial short position in oil in history. Copper speculative longs are at their highs, and commercial shorts are at their highs. The amount of long euro are at their all-time highs. It's a record level short on the dollar. So my point is, not only is the sentiment at extremes, but positioning is at extremes. And listen, these trends, they're very powerful and they can go on for a long time. But right. My point is that when it changes, there is a lot of fuel that when it changes, it can go the other way very fast.
Yeah.
So just everybody, just be careful out there. Whatever your favorite trade is out there, be careful. You know, and this also goes back to sizing things appropriately, right? Like I'll use my dollar trade as an example. Like we've said that people should allocate 5% to this because we could be wrong. That's a way that, if you size your position appropriately at the beginning, even if you get it completely wrong, it doesn't kill you. So I would just recommend that people out there make sure they understand their position sizing. Don't get too crazy with any one asset. And unless you have liquidity, you know, that you can ride out a short-term storm.
Right.
So, I mean, anyway,
we could have a lot of fun next year. But you've got to be smart because those risks are out there. The fundamental argument for what you've said, I think I agree with. I mean, it's there. Long-term structural dollar demand.
Yeah.
But they could forestall that.
Yeah. I mean, February 20th of 2020, markets were at their all-time highs. 20 days or 30 days later, March 2020, equities were down 35% to 50%.
Right.
So,
right.
It can happen very fast.
Right. We can make it all the way through to next year at this time, and they may have been able to forestall it. And that does not mean that you're wrong, because the fundamental, the structural part of this problem is still there. They just managed to kind of keep it together for another year.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, my friend, this has been extremely valuable. Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, it's just great to hear from
you.
I really value your opinion and your education and your wisdom and everything else that you're able to share with us. This has just been great fun. Thank you.
Awesome, man. I hope you and the family have a great Christmas, and I hope you get feeling better. And I look forward to talking to you in the new year.
Yeah. We'll see where we go from here. All right. Thank you, Brent. Yeah. Merry Christmas to you. And thank you everybody for listening. Like I said, I'm not sure we'll have another Thursday conversation next week or not. We'll see. Again, though, have a great day. Thanks, Brent, for all your input. And we'll talk to everybody again soon.